Hello, everybody, and welcome to Uncensored Radio. I'm Jeffrey Emmett, and tonight I have the pleasure of bringing you the very first UCR one-on-one. And my very, very, very first guest is Miss Panda Ross. Say hello to Miss Panda Ross, everybody. How you doing, girl?
I'm doing good. How's everybody doing? How you doing?
You are so much fun. We had you on the show, like, oh, God, it was probably 2 years ago now. It was after your first time on X Factor. And it was so much fun. We had such a blast with you.
I remember it all.
And you just have such an crazy, amazing, incredible story that just kind of spoke to me. And I was like, you know, if we ever do UCR one-on-one, I want Panda Ross to be my first person. Because you just fascinate me. Your whole story is just absolutely fascinating. And I know, like, you've been on X Factor twice now. You have all these great things going on. But we'll get to that in a little bit. First, I want to talk to you. Like, you have an amazing story of really kind of what you went through. Like, life started off kind of rough for you.
Yeah, life started off really rough for me. And I just thank God that, you know, he saved me and time enough to get it on the right path, because the path that I was on was so destructive and just out of control. That, you know, it wasn't the lifestyle that I would want anybody to have to live with. And I thank God that I made it through. Now I can be a testimony for others, you know, that, hey, well, things are possible, you know? So it's been good.
Right. I mean, I've watched your, you have a 5-minute documentary on YouTube and on Vimeo, and you kind of go into it a little bit. You, by 13, you were on drugs, you were drinking, you were, you know, sleeping with older men. So, I mean, it's kind of crazy. Like, what kind of led you into that?
I would just say, I won't even say the environment that I lived in, because even though I lived in a low-income neighborhood, I was raised by my grandmother who raised us. We would have never known that we were poor or didn't have anything, because we actually had the best of everything. Believe me, my grandmother worked 2-3 jobs to make sure that we had the best of everything. I think that it all just kind of comes from maybe not having a mother, you know, and having a grandmother who worked all the time and was never really there to give us the attention and love that, you know, you would see other friends getting from their mothers and fathers. I just think it kind of came from not having a mother or a father figure there, you know, and a grandmother who we knew loved us but didn't really show that affection. And so, you know, longing for that father figure, you know, I think that I reached out to men, you know, just trying to get love in all the wrong places. And so never knowing what to engage that. You know, the only love that I really needed was the love of Jesus Christ. I'm sorry.
No, that's great. And I find that part of the story even more fascinating. But you had gone through your teenage years. You mentioned that you had gone to jail, that you were in prison, and that you had met your baby father at 17.
Yeah, I mean, I started off, it was, well, hey, I got the name Panda. Come on. I mean, you know, that's the name that I was talking about. People would make fun of me because of my size. I was never, you know, the very, what I consider attractive. I mean, you know, I think I've because now my self-esteem has, no one say it's over the top or anything, but I feel good about myself. Regardless of how anyone else looks at me, I feel good about me when I look in the mirror. But when I was younger, looking in the mirror, all I seen was an ugly, fat, black kid. And the only reason why I say that is because that's what was told to me by other kids. And so that's what I grew up thinking. I'm just ugly. I'm just this. I'm just that. You know, kids bullied me. I was a very good fighter, but kids bullied me. And then I would fight to defend myself. And so a lot of people, because I was such a good fighter, and I would beat everybody up, they'd say that I was the bully, but only to feel like I was defending myself and other friends of mine who were too weak to defend themselves. I like to call myself as the defender of the week. But,
In the chaos, though, you're defending other kids. So, I mean, it's not like you were this terrible kid that was doing crazy drugs. You know, I think people tend to look at somebody and say, oh, well, that's where they're from, so of course they're going to do this, you know, and it kind of becomes a racial thing. And I love that you said, you know, it's not even a product of my neighborhood. It's just these other factors that played into it. Because I feel like race and poverty levels, they get blamed too much for these things. And there's so much more to that. And these bullies at school, like, people are not putting in all these contributing factors into why a child strays into these other issues, you know, to drinking or to drugs or sex or whatever. Like, there's so many things.
But when it all boils down to it, it's really all a part of just making choices. You know what I mean? You can, because we see NBA players, NFL players, we see different people who made it out, and it's because of the choice they made. So it's all about the choice, not about the neighborhood, the race, or the people, or
right.
the things around you, because we're different people are dealt different parts, and so you deal with the parts that are dealt with you, and you make the best of each situation. Now, I, you know, made some bad decisions, you know, growing up, you know, like I said, it felt like I had the best of everything. We had the first Atari game machine in the apartment complex. People would come to our house just to see our house. We had the nicest apartment, game machines, all the best things, everything, and the kid would want. And so, you know, I just seriously never knew I was poor. I always had to fight because of that, my size and everything. But then when I got, and all of the fighting just caused me to go from, because my fighting got more aggressive to the point to where I started picking up objects and hitting people and cutting people.
Ooh.
You know, it got bad. And so those are the things that started me off in juvenile hall. You know what I'm saying? And then, you know, when I got out of juvenile hall, just because of the way that I felt about myself and my low self-esteem, those are the things that led me to drinking and drugging, because I felt like I was trying to fit in with everybody else. And so if I do
right.
this, I'll fit in with everybody else. I'll hang out at the park, I'll drink, I'll smoke weed, I'll party. And, you know, this is not what I really want to do, because I was always the only black kid at the party, and there was all white people. Because when I grew up in New Mexico, there was a lot of white people, but I lived on the south side, so there was quite a few African Americans, and I had my bathroom. But I had my good friends, so I'd hang with my good friends because I knew inside of me there was a lot of good, you know, and I'd hang with my bad friends on the south side because I just wanted to fit in, and I never really found the balance in between the two. That's why I made the wrong choices, you know, and hung out and started getting high and stuff. And my grandmother, being an elderly lady who had 11 children that she had already raised me and my two sisters in her elderly years, was not easy. So that's when she, you know, took me out the balance and end of my life. But yeah, it was crazy. It was, to say the least.
I can't imagine. Do you feel that being sent to a juvenile hall, did that even do anything for you? Because I feel like today we just throw these kids away and throw them into systems. And instead of really looking at the issues of, if somebody took the time to stop and look at your background and look at your weight or what was really going on with you, do you think somebody could have made a difference at that point?
Well, I can say this. I've had school teachers. I've had different people who influenced me in life. I had a choir director, my children's choir director at the church. I had different people who invested things into my life. And so, again, it goes back to just making choices, and it all falls back on the person themselves, because you just have to make a choice, because some people have brothers and fathers that come from good homes, and they influence them, and they have the best of everything, and they're shown the right way, but they choose the wrong path. Me, on the other hand, I have my grandmother who was never there. But it's still, it, you know what I'm saying? I let the neighborhood let me make choices. So I still say that it's all about choices. You know, we can get into the system. And when my grandmother used to always say, you're going to mind somebody. And I knew when I went to juvenile hall, being in that jail cell, being locked down, that alone in itself is enough to make anybody say, because no one grows up saying, I want to go to jail or I want to be a thug. That's not the lifestyle you want to be. It's
how
you getting involved in, you know what I'm saying? But when you hit that jail cell for the first time, it's like, you know, it's a good time to make a wake-up call and make an intelligent decision. The only thing is that sometimes people get out and they get drawn back into the neighborhood and into the things of the neighborhood, you know what I mean? Instead of taking an opportunity for they have their wake-up call and then go the right path. So, you know, it's boils down to choices, but, I feel personally, you know, that there are different avenues set up to help young people to get themselves together. And if any young person is out there and they're listening to me today, you're listening to a woman who has been through, gone through, and did everything under the sun and moon that I should be 6 feet under my grave. But I thank God for His grace because, you know, I made it out. But you might not be the lucky one to make it out if you didn't take this opportunity today to take it upon yourself to make an intelligent decision to turn from that to the right, from left to the right.
And I think that was one of the great things that I loved about you. And I, too, really appreciate the fact that you break it down to it's about choices. You know, and I have foster kids now, and they're teenagers. And that's something I'm constantly telling them. Life is all about the choices you make. You cannot control anybody else's actions, but you can control your reactions. And it's all about choices. So I think that's great. And I think, you know, you have the right message to send to young people. Like, you can make it through, but it's all about your choices that you make. And it's, at the end of the day, you can't blame anybody else because you're the one that made the choice.
And I want to throw this out there, and I'm not trying to jump the gun because I know we'll get to that too. But I have to say it because my mind is short. My ADD is actually
here. Girl, I'm right there with you. I'm with you.
But this is one of the opportunities that and the doors that have been opened for me since the Ed Actor, because even though they edit a lot of stuff in the television show, they gave me the opportunity to say, but this is the gift that God gave me, and I just want to take the time to make, you know, people's day. And people were curious because they knew from that, even that little statement, that there was more to the story. And so doors have been opened, and I have really basically nonstop traveled and been places that I would have never thought that I would have been. I've been to schools, I've been to churches, I've been to different settings, parks, and I have been able to minister to, and I say minister, and all of it hasn't been in a church setting, because like I said, some of it's been in schools and different stuff like that. So I've been able to talk, and that's my goal, and that's the group that I target, is young people, because I go into these schools, and I guess you could basically call it motivational speaking. Of course, they love the accents, and they get excited about that, and the music, and of course, I go in, and I say a few things, and I make them laugh, and I sing the song, but then I get serious, and I begin to tell them about the life that I led, and the story. When you can see these young kids, their mouth and their eyes are like, oh my God, they're hurt, because to them, I don't look like somebody that would have done all that, and so it's amazing,
right.
Even in the church scenes that I've been to at the end of every service, because I'll talk a little, I'll sing a song, and I'm a natural comedian, I guess, and that's just one of the other gifts that God gave me. I'll have them laughing 1 minute and crying the next minute. I'll sing a song that'll get them crying. But at the end, when we bring it all together, I've seen so many young people, young girls, teenage girls, pregnant. I mean, altar calls full of young people weeping and crying before the Lord. And I know that through my testimony, even though I didn't feel wonders then, I asked God why I had to go through all of this. But I know that it was for others, because a lot of these young girls and young guys that have heard my testimony and I've been able to interact with 101, they'll never have to go through what I went through, regardless of what they were going through. But once they heard my story, they will never have to go through that, because it was a life change before. And so that's a lot of what I've been doing since the show is just motivational speaking, singing, and going different places. You know, I haven't won $1 million, but I said that if I can turn 5 million lives around for the better, then that's worth more than $5 million to me.
Right. And that was one of the reasons why I wanted to do this so badly with you, and I really waited for you to do this because, and it was not my end, but, you know, I didn't want to do this with anybody else, because you, that from that moment, I don't even remember if I was watching X Factor or if I saw the clip, of you walking onto that in that camera angle, and just your charisma, your talent, and just your personality just instantly captivated me. And I know it did with so many people across the country.
Oh,
you just, you have this thing about you where, you know, everybody just wants to love you and I think be your friend. And one of the things that I find amazing is, you know, I'm obviously friends with you on Facebook and I see all these posts. And just the people, like, I saw it was a couple weeks ago, last month or so, that your phone had broke and somebody sent you a phone.
Yes. Oh, my God. Man, that was amazing. I got two phone iPhones sold back to back. And because of what I do, you know, you can have any kind of phone. But one thing about the iPhone, you can do something things with it. You know, so in the business aspect of what I do. And so it was like, okay, I can get into the phone, but I need an iPhone. I can do so many things with an iPhone that I just can't use another phone. But they're so expensive. And back to back, I had two sold. And I was so discouraged because, you know, even though things have slowed down a little bit, and then just last year, everything was going so fast. And, you know, I've never become rich from what I've been doing, but finances were continuously coming, and I was able to pay off a lot of debt and get in a pretty good position. But I guess over the past 2 months, you know, things have slowed down, and you know, bills started piling up, and things started happening. So when that phone came up, and that was like my last thought, because even though I was going through a lot of stuff, I was still keeping a smile on my face and a positive attitude, because I knew, you know, things can only get better. But I was so excited. Sit on that porch, and I was on the porch with my front porch, and I was saying, man, I wish I had this lovely chicken called Rudy's here in Dallas. And I was like, man, I wish I had some Rudy's chicken. And I was sitting there eating grilled cheese sandwich, and I just finished it, and the UPS man walked up. And I looked up, and he was going to my door, and I said, what are you looking for? He said, Sandy Ross. And I said, that's me. And he said, oh, I got a package for you, sign it. And I signed that package, and I opened up that package, and it was an iPhone in there. The one I'm talking to you on now, that was an iPhone. It was a card with $20 in it. And it, that just, you know, they say faith is the substance of things hoped for but not seen. And you know, you sometimes it's hard for us to believe things that we can't tangibly see. But, I mean, that's where faith kicks in. But, oh, that boosted my faith so much because I was, like, down in the dumps and then feeling mighty low. And I just was hearing my own stuff saying, oh, ye of little faith. And then right in the midst of time, it's just like that door was open. I showed up and, you know, it took me to a whole other level in my faith.
Well, and I think that's something, too, you know, I've found in this business now. We filmed a reality show, and, you know, the other girls on the show were on TV shows. People tend to have this false notion that once you're on TV, you're rich. And it doesn't necessarily work out that way, and I really kind of appreciate you kind of saying it. Like, you know, things have slowed down a little bit. Because people have this kind of misconception. Once you're on TV, everything changes. But not necessarily the way you think it would. So let's kind of talk about that. Like you first went on X Factor, you know, how did it change your life?
Well, it changed my life. To me, okay, well, it did change my life. It's that I'm still trying. I still haven't quite all the way figured out how it changed my life because I'm the same panda as I was then. My grandmother has always said that I've never been a stranger. So everybody I've met has always been my friend. I'm like, you my friend. So I knew a lot of people. The popularity, I mean, once they put me on the front page of Yahoo, it was like I opened up my Facebook page, I had 600-some friend requests. And so, you know, I didn't look at it as fans, but these are my new friends. And now I got a friend in the country, every state, so I'm thinking in my mind, I can go visit anywhere and don't have to stay in a hotel because I got a friend over there.
I know that's right, girl. It's the truth. It is fabulous having friends all over the country, isn't it?
It is. So it was so amazing. Like, you know, my Twitter just went up, my Facebook went up. Now, and I will say this because, you know, people tend to, you know, and it's just natural. I guess, you know, if you're hot, you're hot. If you're not, you're not. So, you know, people, they flock to you when you're hot. And then when you're not hot, then they kind of tend to pull away from you because every day I get messages, oh, five people unfollowed you. Well, four people followed you on Twitter. Well, 20 people unfollowed you, but 13 people followed you. So, you know, you have people who follow you, unfollow you, and not for any specific reason, but maybe because you're not in the limelight and they're looking to find friends that are all in the limelight. And life has been good. Since the X Factor, you know, I have, like I said, I've been able to, what I consider is just fulfill and live my dream, because the only thing that I want to do that makes me happy is singing and making people's day. I don't care whether it's in a coffee shop or whether it's in a school or whether it's in a church. I just want to sing and I just want to live my life. I have been through so much in my life that I don't have time to worry about things that I can't control. And so the one thing that I can do is I can just continue to sing and have joy. And although a lot of people know me now, the fortune didn't come with the fame. I've had people try to come to my apartment 3 times over the past year. And I know that people, they see me sing and travel on the weekends, and people tend to think that I got a lot of money. I've never made a whole bunch of money. I think I'm the highest amount of money that I made on one gig was probably $2,000. So, you know, maybe I might make $500. Maybe I might make $200. Maybe, you know, the most money I ever made on one gig, I think, was like $2,000. So that's not a lot of money. And once you get home, heels, you got debt, you know. And so the good thing about all the stuff that I've done in the little bit of money that I have made, well, I was able to pay off debt that I owed. And so one thing about it now, my credit scores went up. I don't owe anybody. Do I have a lot of money in the bank? No.
Am I but you have don't money? Have debt.
But I don't have debt. So, you know, yeah, people see you on TV and they seem to think, you know, you got a lot of stuff. But, you know, this thing about the music industry, it's got to be your passion. It's got to be what you want to do. For some people, you know, maybe it's about who you know and you can get in real easy and make a lot of money real quick. For others of us, you know, it's just a passion. It's something that you do. And if you happen to get rich along the way, so it's God. And some of us make it. And, I mean, as far as the finance-wise, it's, you know, we make it and some don't. Some just mediocre make money along the way, you know. But for me, it's never really truly been about the money. It's always been about fulfilling my dream and living my life without regret. Because when I die, I don't want to die and you have to lie at my funeral. Or I have to go before God and say, I wish I would have, you know. I'm going to live my life to the fullest.
And I think that's what's so amazing about you, is that it's about passion, it's about changing people's lives. And the money's great, don't get me wrong. I mean, I kind of feel the same way. Like, my whole philosophy with this radio show and the reality show is, if I can make a ton of money, that's awesome. That would be fantastic. But then, you know, I want to go back and give it back. You know, there's no reason. I do not need millions and millions of dollars. I do not need that. I will never need that. But there are people that giving them $100 on the side of the street will make all of the difference to their life. You know, so that's always kind of been my goal. If I ever make it big, you know, and we've got tons of cash coming in to where we don't have to worry, like, I'm going to go give back, because that's what you do. You take care of people. And I feel like, you know, that's just what you do. And I think that's why I'm always so drawn to you about that, is you've always found a way to give back. And I remember back when we talked before, like, you were heading to Rochester to go do a gig. And, you know, you're just... I think it's very rare to find people in the industry that have the heart like yours. You know, it's not, it's about money, it's about being famous, it's about, you know, getting the attention, the free gifts. And for you, it's not. And I think that's something that's amazing. And, you know, younger kids that are wanting to be singers or to be entertainers or to be comics, it's something you need to pay attention to, because it's not easy and not everybody makes a ton of money. But when you do have money, you need to be smart with it.
Right, exactly. Because it was easy come, easy go. And I know when I was, like, I would talk to the young kids all the time, because I just to have this heart for young people. And I would talk to the young people all the time because, believe it or not, here I am, 42, 43, when we started doing the thing. And I would hear these kids, 16, 17, they'd be over there at the expenses just bawling and crying. If I don't make it this time, I'm through. I give up. I'm going to kill myself even. And I mean, like, all kinds of stuff. And I'm like, you're 16. You have your whole life ahead of you.
Right.
Last opportunity. This isn't your last opportunity. This is one of many. Because if you don't make it, you just keep going. But
right.
God, that must be a cheerleader and an encourager to a lot of those young people over there.
And I think that also ties into, after the first time you were on the show, we didn't really see you again. And everybody was like, where the hell's Panda? Like, where is he? What's going on?
Yeah, that was pretty crazy because, of course, I went to boot camp and I did my thing. I made it through and I made it through again. And then we did the group rounds and they never showed any of that. They had us sing a song with a little help from my friend. And from after groups, then they got down to the last 40 and then they did the sing off and they chose the top 24. So when I made it all the way down to the last 40. And then when they got ready to do the sing-off, they sent me home and, you know, it closed the top 24. But they never, ever showed me again. And to this day, I'll never understand why they didn't show me. Because to me, that, you know, even if I was Simon Cowell, when he is a rich millionaire, and I'm pretty sure he's not going to be broke because he didn't put me through. But I feel if I was him and I wanted my show to be successful, knowing that people on Twitter and Facebook and everywhere, your official X Factor page asking where's Panda, even if I'm not going to pick you to win, I'll continue to put you through for a little while to keep the views up. You know what I mean? And then I'll just meet you at a certain point in the show because we're not going to pick you. First of all, you're probably in their mind too old. We don't want a guy. We don't want a gospel slash R&B artist. You know, we're looking for something more pop or whatever. But I would have kept me around, you know, for the purpose of you, you know.
Well, and I think a lot of fans felt that way because, you know, everybody kind of fell in love with you from that first thing. Like you said, you were on the Yahoo page. Everybody, America kind of fell in love with you, and then they just didn't show you again. It was just very odd of them. But then the best part of this whole story is you go back again. You don't give up. Even after they don't put you on again, you went back to the show. And then it happened.
And what's so weird is because I never could, and to this day, I never have understood why they didn't put me through. And I was thinking maybe it's because I'm overweight and they thought I was going to get sick. I don't know, because by the time we went to boot camp, I was completely healed from pneumonia. I was in the best shape ever as far as, you know, not being sick or anything. Yes, I was still overweight, but I wasn't sick, not one little bit. And so I was thinking that maybe they thought I'm going to relax, maybe I might get sick, maybe I was just too big. You know, because they did have a certain criteria in the way they want people to look a certain way. And that's just the way all of the shows are. I got the gastric bypass surgery after the show, but I didn't get a gastric bypass surgery because I wanted to go back and be senior. I was having problems with diabetes and high blood pressure, and although I had thought about it for weight loss surgery, I had said, no, I'm not going to get it because I don't want people pregnant on me. But when I got sick and I had high blood pressure and the ambulance came to my house, my blood pressure was 220 over 180. When I went back to see my daughter, my doctor said, Panda, the only thing that can turn it around is a gastric bypass surgery for me right now. That'll completely dissolve the diabetes, the high blood pressure. And from that day, since I've had the surgery to this one, I've never had that problem again. Very glad I had the surgery because, yes, physically I feel better. I think I look better. I've always felt good about myself, you know, since I got to gave my life to the Lord and got a new aspect and my, you know, self, you know, my momentum about myself. I'm trying to feel good, my self-esteem. It's like, you know, from then to now, it's like about even big, I feel good about myself. But I definitely feel better about myself when I know I can go and get in an airplane and sit in one seat and strap myself in and, hey, I can wear some clothes and floors. I mean, yeah, I feel good about myself. So when I went back to New Orleans this year, I wanted to wow Simon's head off. And when I walked out there on that stage, I was like, oh, Simon. I wish they would have showed it. And if they would have showed it, it would have tripped you out. Because I was like, oh, Simon, I'm back. And he was just sitting there looking at me like, who the hell are you? And I was like, Simon, your baby mama. And he was like, Tonda? And I was like, yeah, baby, it's me, your baby mama. And I just went on and on. Demi was in tears, and she was talking about how much I had changed. And you can see a little bit of this, of that, her telling me that on Yahoo, because when you see the Lindsay Parker write-up about what about Pandas, the Pinkie Pandas back, or whatever, the article that she wrote this year, it has a video at the end of Demi Lovato telling me about how much I've changed over 1 year and how proud she was of me. That I'm telling you, they must have talked like 15, 20 minutes. And then I sang a song called You'll Lose a Good Thing, which will be on iTunes next week. And so that's the song. I sang that song. When I got to singing that song, Kelly Rowlands was singing the song, and all the judges gave me dances, and they gave me rave reviews, and then all of my fans who came with me, which were 11 people, one of them had a panda suit on. We all let them run out on the stage. If they would have showed it on TV, it would have been amazing. I've seen one interview where Simon said that because it was the same result this year as it was from last year, that's why they chose not to show me it all on the show this year. But the weird thing about it is they made my fans think that I was coming back because they put videos on YouTube of with me in the videos. And then they had their website, and they put me on the front page of their website on the official X Factor page. So when you clicked on the page, I was the face that came up. So everybody was all excited. Panda's back, Panda's back. But we get to some Los Angeles, and they already had picked the 40. They told us to pick songs, and we're going to perform the next morning. We sat in that building for like 12, 13 hours, and then they started them come out and tell us they've been canceled. And producer told me that they had a contract for who they were going to, whether it was going to be me or Lily McLeod. And since I had already been there, and Lily was like 50-something, and this bad body, and she could think they chose to keep her. But, you know, as we all know, they picked her and sent her home. She's not, you know, up in the show, and the show's canceled now. But I figured, once again, if I was Simon, I would have been a fan of that, because she was a fan favorite, people were looking for. And it was just running rapid on Twitter and Facebook and their official page, that Panda's back. And so it's like, you know, it would have kept the views for the shows, you know, to keep the show going. So, yeah, I don't think it was a smart piece of truth on his part. But oh well.
Well, girl, and you know, they're no longer here. So, I mean, there's a testimony about that. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I'm just saying. But
I'm just saying.
Simon will be back. I'm sure my baby daddy will be back with something. Right now he's raising up my stepson.
Oh my god!
You know, with my wife-in-law, I'm the original baby mama. So, Lord, she's more like a wife-in-law or something.
That's amazing. So, I'm sure everybody wants to know, have you thought about trying out for any of the other shows?
Because of the experience with X Factor and knowing a couple of people from American Idol in a very personally, to me, all of the shows kind of they have a concept and they have agendas and they have certain things that they're looking for, and if you don't fall into that criteria, you know, you can go and you can try out and they might use you for filming purposes or whatever, but really you don't have a chance. And so if you're not what they're looking for, if you're what they're looking for, you might have a chance. So in the,
right.
With that said, all of that, the way that they, because if it was all about the talent and promoting someone, yeah, maybe I'd go back. But after, you know, going to The Voice and being in a room with 10 people, And I'm not saying, because I always say, let another man toot your horn, don't toot your own horn. But I know for a fact that I was in a room with 10 people who I way out sang, and they picked one who couldn't even remember the words. So I was like, oh, that was with the voice. And then two times with the accent, I was like, oh, no, I'm not going to do this anymore. I don't know if this is the avenue that God has for me. But what? One thing that I just know is that I'll never stop singing. I'll never stop singing. I don't know how and where my big break is going to come through. But as long as I keep singing and I keep moving and I keep going different places doing my thing, then that's what I'm going to do.
Well, and I think that's all you can do until somebody finally wakes up. But I wonder if part of the issue is, too, you know, I'm a big, huge R&B fan. So that was the next big thing. Like, the girls that I have living with us, they're tripping because every morning I get in the shower since I've downloaded your fabulous little song there by Sam Cooke. Girl, I be having a repeat on my phone while I'm in the shower. And I'm in the shower being like, bring it on home. And I can't sing a lick. Like, I can't hit a note to save my life. But the girls are just like, who is that? What is your obsession with that song? I'm like, it's just so soulful in your voice. It just, and you know, the sad thing to me is I feel like we're getting away from R&B. Like, it's not really, you know, where it was 10 years ago. You know what I mean? Right now,
you can't even say who's the R&B soul. You know, and one the two people that I felt could kind of stay true to it. But even, you know, one of them had to kind of get halfway pop. But I thought Jennifer Hudson I want to call her name, One American Idol. I just watched her story on TVD on Lifetime the other day. Fantasia. I always felt honestly like they were the last two R&B artists that I've personally heard of. I mean, seriously, when you say, who's the R&B artist today? You can't say Rihanna. You can't say Beyonce.
Nope.
All the great singers, but they're all half-pop. They do it, you know? It's like, and that's good that, you know, R&B is a genre all in itself. And so
it's
a kind of a forgotten genre. And so for people like myself who, you know, I sing a little bit of everything, but if I have to, just, hey, this is my area, it would be R&B. And I don't see that a lot with R&B singers. I just don't see it. And I don't know why. And I will say this, the crossover is kind of nice, because I will say this, and not to throw my people under the bus or anything like that, but I do a lot of white fans, Spanish fans, and when I do go different places and I sing, you know, they're the majority of the ones that are buying the CDs and the tapes and everything. And so you do want to kind of cater and be open to all people. I can go to a arena where there's all black people, and I might sell a few CDs, but they might take them and go and burn them and give them to everybody. So, you know, it's the finances, I don't know. Maybe the white people got more money. I don't know how it is.
There is something, you know, about it, but I feel more, I don't know, for me, like, I get in the car, I don't even listen to the radio anymore, because I'm like, okay, I've turned into my mother, everything's crap, and I find, like, I'm going through my iPod, I'm listening to Babyface, I'm listening to John B., I'm listening to you, Mary J. Blige, you know, older stuff, all stuff from like at least 10 years ago, if not well back into the 80s and the 70s. Give me some Al Green, Otis Redding, Purchase, like, just, you know, I want, it's just, to me, like, you know, my husband, he's like, everything you listen to is sad, it's just kind of, I'm like, no, it's peaceful. Like, I just want to sit on the dock and just listen, or I'm going to float in the pool with a little glass of wine, and I'm just going to enjoy the afternoon.
Exactly. Hey, but check it out. I'm listening to the artists that you said. But when you think about the artists that you said, all those artists mostly are 90 and back. So when you think about this decade, 90 to 2000, 2014, you really can't name
groups
or solo artists that are unique. They're all crossover, you know, back and forth, R&B, flash pop, flash soul, you know what I mean?
Yeah, because absolutely.
The Boyz II Men and New Edition, all them, they were, you know, that was like, that was R&B. But, you know, try to get L.A. Reid to sign somebody for R&B right now. He ain't trying to do that. That's not going to be it.
Well, it's really sad. Because, you know, I know so many people that we all complain, like the one R&B station we had here, it's just kind of disappeared. And it's like, I'm not listening to some song talking about a girl, I'm going to crash my car into a bridge. You know, that's not really my bag. I'm just not going to go there.
When I hear some rap and different stuff, but then I hear more Bruno Mars, Miley Cyrus, and everybody else on K104. Right.
Since you brought her up, what is your take on what the hell has happened to Miss Miley Cyrus? Let's get Panther's take.
Miley Cyrus tripped me out. I really don't know how to take Miley Cyrus. I mean, you know, I will say that I listened when she was on Disney. And I don't get into her music now. And it's just because I guess maybe I'm too old. I just don't understand it. I don't know. But the stuff that she does, her dressing and her twerking, I'm like, it just seems like it ought to be a little bit of a classier way to do it, but her fans love it, and they love it, and praise God, that's them, but I would never go out and buy one of her CDs instead of get to one of her concerts. Now, if I met her in person, I'd be excited, because I am,
So, aren't you saying that Panda Ross will not be twerking anytime soon?
Shoot, Panda Ross will be twerking? What are you talking about? Just because I'm 24, I still got it, baby. Yeah. I just don't twerk with other people. You know, I might not go take it all the way down. I drop it. I just don't drop it all the way down.
I know that's right.
We're from the 44-year-old level.
We're doing the old folks twerk.
I got the old folks twerk going.
We're getting old. We can't twerk like that no more. I bought a little.
Oh,
you too much. I tell my friends constantly, I'm like, I got to go call Sailor Shields to give me that once monthly Boniva because things are not doing the things they're supposed to.
Oh, you're funny.
Oh, girl. But so I want to go back a little bit because one of the things that also stood out to me in your documentary was you said there was a moment that your life changed. It was when a man came up and gave you a flyer. Can we talk about that for a few minutes?
Yeah. You know, my grandmother had recently moved to Dallas. And she was taking care of my kids. And I would call home all the time saying, I'm going to change. I'm going to get it together. This time I'm going to do right. Now, this is a story I've been saying since he was out. Every time I would go to jail or get out, this time I'm going to do that. This time I'm going to do that. But I fall back into the same category. So, of course, my family had no reason to believe that this time was going to be different than any other. But seriously, I remember the pastor that I had when I was growing up. He would always preach out of Psalms 23. And my grandmother, Psalms number one, I mean, and 23, but Psalms number one. And I can hear it. If I close my eyes and listen closely, I can hear his voice right now. So I would be out there and preaching, I'd be in that high when people say they hear voices. Now, I never did trip out and act all crazy when I get high. And I was never one of those good preachers. But there would be times that I would be alone and have to hear him quoting that scripture. But at the same time, I would call home all the time and say, this time, I'm going to get it together. But I could hear my grandmother, and she would always say, Pandy, you need to get your life together, because I'm not always going to be here to take care of these kids and you. And I'd say, I am. And so I remember one night, I was walking the streets, and I had gotten high, and I now began dead. Next thing you know, I got raised, and almost that field. It was like back-to-back, things were happening. 4 or 3 period. I found myself in a hotel. I went from a size 18 to a size 7, and I looked in the mirror, and I was like, man, I got to change. So I went to this man's house, who was probably like, well, bigger than that, and I told him, I got to get my life together, man. I got to give myself a rehab, and blah, blah, blah. And I remember he told me to sit down, take a nap, wake up, eat, take a shower, we're going to find somewhere to go. By the time I woke up, there was a young woman there who had drugs and turned me on. Next thing you know, the thought of rehab was out of my head, and we were at four shoplifting. And well, she was half, and I was kind of like the watch-out person going outside. And I'm just standing there waiting for her to come out. And a man walks up to me, and he gives me a flyer, and he asked me, are you on drugs? And I was like, no. Nah. He's like, yeah, you're on drugs. He says, I know my people. He says, I delivered you some heroin, drugs, and hit drugs, and he was talking about gang violence, and that he had moved to Dallas from California, and with the ministry, and that, you know, God was using him to tell me that he still loved me, and I had to kiss, and I was like, he started telling me, he had these peanuts he was trying to tell me, and I was like, I don't got no kids. He said, I know, but take the peanuts in the flyer, and see if he says, one day you're going to use it. And I said, I'm going to use it. You're right about it. I said, I'm going to go to the Christian rehab home that you're telling me, but it's just not today. But today I'm going to continue to get high. I kept that card for 3 weeks, and let me tell you, over those 3 weeks, I went through everything. You know how well, I'm telling you, my spirit, when I see that song, Sinister, I should be dead. Yeah, I'm serious. Like, my story has to be in a book. I wish I had a good book writer who could help me to put my story into a book, because it would be a book that you'd never put down. And,
girl, we can talk about that after the show.
For real. It was like, so he gave me that flyer, and I just kept it. And 3 weeks later, I was at my end's wit, and I called my grandmother, and I told her to come pick me up, but I had somewhere to go. She hung up the phone in my face. But then she turned around, and I called her back, and she stepped after the phone again. We began to talk, and I was like, she believed me. And she came and picked me up, and she took me to this Christian rehab home. And let me tell you, that was January 25th, 1997. And from that day to this day, I've never done drugs again. And I don't, it's like, I have my struggles with things that I know personally that I would like to get back in my spiritual life. And those are things, there's things that I'm working on. And I guess that's between me and my Lord and Savior. But I don't even come over with drugs, you know. And the thought of drugs, it's like you could drop an 8-ball instead of my house and down with a fresh white mixture. It wouldn't bother me. I could step right over. You know, and I'm just serious about that, because many other things that probably could take me out, but drugs are not one of them. It's just like all of a sudden, and I remember this, and I believe to this day, the reason why that is because the day that I said that sinister and I gave my life to the Lord, I said one thing behind it. I said, God, I don't want to go back. I don't want to do anything that I've been living. I don't like the way I look. And you know what? If I ever go back to drugs now, I want you to kill me as soon as I took a hit of that crack cocaine pipe. And in the beginning, when I first got saved, I would think about going back. But that thought was what I had told you. If I take a hit, kill me, that thought stuck in my head. And it's always, I think, kept me from going back. Because one thing I don't want people to do in the kitchen, then to put me in the ground, and they'd be like, how did she die? Oh, she smoked crack. No, that ain't the story. Well, that's not the type of legacy that I want to leave. And so, you know, I'm working hard to build the legacy.
Well, you know, and the thing that's great about you is you maybe could have helped Miss Whitney. God rest that woman's soul. You know, and it's so funny that we hear your struggle with it and that you were able to overcome it, where somebody like Whitney Houston, who had the career, the fame, the money, child, and she, you know, she just couldn't kick it. And it's just heartbreaking. And, you know, when you have that kind of opportunity, like, I think it just changes people to where if you get the fame after you can have it, I think it may be a little easier for some people because you don't have the money and all the people around you saying yes, 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 yes.
Yeah, yeah. And that one thing too that I've always said, you know, money and fame is good. Ain't nothing wrong with it. You know what I'm saying? Actually, even in the song that I wrote, in the song, one of my songs that I wrote, it says, I say, making money, it's not sinful, and having fun, it's not a crime. But now it's time for me, a change of time. And so when I think about that, making money, it's not simple. It's not, you know, it's nothing wrong with that. All that's good. But I always told God, I said, God, if it's going to be something that's going to take me back to where I come from, then don't allow it to happen. Because I don't want money to change who I am. I don't want it to, and I don't feel like it would. Even if I came into a lot of money now, I would probably end up giving it all away. Because that's just how my heart works, and that's what I do now. Even in my poverty, I give everything away.
Well, and you know, I think that also comes with age and experience, and you've had the life you've had. And you know, I mean, I can relate because I've been, you know, not obviously nearly as bad as what you've gone through, but you know, I was floating on that path for a while myself. So I think once you go through that and you come out the other side, it kind of changes you for life. It's something you never forget about.
Right. Exactly.
So, I think it's amazing. But I know we've talked about you having new songs coming out. Let's talk about where can people find you now. I know I just got your song, Bring It On Home, on iTunes. And it's only 99 cents. I'm like, people, what are you doing here? Girl, go give the girl. It's 99 cents. Come on.
You get that. Everybody go get that single. Because that single is going to help me to finish this last CD. And the more people that will get that CD and share it on their Facebooks and retweet it, hey, it's going to make me happy because I'm not trying to get people to buy it so I can be no millionaire, because you don't get become a millionaire off of them 99 cents when you ain't got a fan base like Beyonce, unless you got a fan base like Beyonce. But you can get enough people to go out and get it. You know, it's just going to, it really, I guess it's true. In all honesty, that 99 cents, it's not even just about having my song on your screen. It is actually about investing in other people's lives, because the 99 cents for the thing, of course, you know, we get a little percentage, 65%, 70%, whatever. But the money that comes back, I'm using that money to make another CD, another gospel CD, and another what I call redemption CD. I got different songs on there, and those songs, they tell a story too. But these songs, I use them, you know, all geared towards helping other people. And so I basically invest in other people. I go a lot of places. Sometimes I sell CDs. Sometimes I end up giving them all away, because there's always a message in my music, and I want the message to get out there. So, you know, people who download that CD, just know download that CD, know that, you know, you're investing in somebody else's life, and not just a song. It's not just a song. It's really an investment in somebody else's life. Now, I have the Bring It On Home, of course, that I got all four yeses with on it, and I'm very proud of that song. I love that song. It's always been one of my favorites. But the song that got me four yeses this year, You'll Lose a Good Thing, it'll be on iTunes next week. And so if people want to get a hold of me, hey, maybe you got a wedding coming up and you need a wedding singer, hey, I am available.
Girl, I was just going to ask you, do you do weddings? Because I got some friends that are getting married, okay?
I went to a funeral. I went and bought me a car not too long ago. And the guy that sold me the car, his mom ended up passing away, and he paid me to come and sing at his mom's funeral. But after hearing the legacy that this lady left, I would have sang at her funeral for free, because she was attached to God, and she won so many souls and opened up churches in Mexico and helped to bring homeless people into her house. She was an amazing woman. So, you know, but they paid me, and thank God for that, because it opened up the door and made a way for another deal to be paid. But, yeah, you know, I'm available for parties, for meetings, I'm available for whatever. I love to sing, and I promise you this, if someone books me to come to their show, they're going to get their money's worth. And so the place where they can support me at is on my Facebook, my fan page, my Twitter, my Instagram. Twitter and Instagram, those are Real Pandora. And my Facebook page, Pandora, but they can also just go directly to my website, www.andrewrobson.com. And there I am. You can see me, some of my videos, my store, places I'm going to be soon, you know, booking information if you want me to come, you know. And one thing about Panda Ross is, hey, you're going to get great entertainment and it ain't going to cost you a whole arm and leg.
All right, tell everybody that website one more time.
www.andrewrobson.com.
That's right. So make sure you go there. Oh, girl, we still got some time. I was just trying to get your plugs in.
Right, and I got a couple of things that I'm working on. We are supposed to be doing this web series. We're working with the lady now, getting a few kinks. There's still some kinks in the way, but things are evening out, and hopefully by September, we'll have this web series up. It was supposed to be up in July. But in the web series is going to consist of people who were formerly on X Factor, American Idol, and The Voice. So these are people who we didn't make it to be the winner, but we, you know, got a little popularity or fame or whatever from the show. And so people do know us. We do have a bit of a fan base and following. And so it's going to be a show geared toward really talking about who we are today, our passion for music. And it will be a little bit of a singing competition, but you know what I'm saying, because people will have to go online and vote. And we're doing that. I'm also working with another man, Nathan L. Joaquin, and he's a blind man, and he lives in Brazil. So I'm working with him, and we've been working out little kinks for me to come over to Brazil and to do a workshop over there for a week. So I'm looking forward to that. Also with a ministry that I belong to a ministry called Victory Outreach Church, and we have an extended part of our ministry which helps people with drug and alcohol problems. We have Christian rehabilitation homes for men and women free of charge all over the world. This is the hugest drug ministry, I would say drug and alcohol ministry, period. Victory Outreach has been around since 1967. We are about to have our world convention. We rented out the whole convention, the Los Angeles Convention Center next to the Staples Center. There will be nobody in that building but Victory Outreach from July 31st to August the 9th. So we rented, August the 8th, we rented out the whole building for the whole week. And all of our churches from all around the world are going to be there. And the good thing about it is I'm going to get to be there, and it's such an honor to be able to sing a solo at this event, because we're talking about 50, 60, 70,000 people. It's going to be a lot of us. And so, and it always is. We do this once every 4 years. So we're going to Los Angeles July 3rd. The last week of July through the first week of August. And from there, I'm supposed to go to Brazil, but we haven't worked out all the plans yet. So things are still moving in the Panda Ross camp, and that's why I want everybody to keep up with me on my website, because that way they can see if I'm in a city or a town near them soon. I got a call from a lady today, too, and I have to call her back when I get off the phone with you about a show in Albuquerque, New Mexico. So see how that goes there.
Girl, if you go there, stop over at Twister's and get you the chicken burrito. It's fabulous.
Hey, you know I love me some Mexican food.
Ooh, girl, it's my favorite. I love Albuquerque. Me and Albuquerque got a love relationship. Mm-mm. Ooh.
Okay, remember that. Tell me the name of it again.
Twister's.
Twister's. Okay, I'll remember that.
Like the movie. You know, the one about the tornadoes. Twister's.
I want to say, too, to everybody out there that's probably listening, that I love you guys. Thank you. And for those of you that have continued to follow me on this journey, I truly appreciate you. I pray for you, and I pray that you pray for me, and that, you know, you keep up with me. And, you know, just watch me and follow me as I follow God. So whatever path you want, I will definitely be on that path.
And in closing, what advice do you have for anybody that's trying to follow in your footsteps that saw you on there? Maybe they're a little bigger. Maybe they don't look exactly what the cover models would look like. But they want to be a singer, or they want to be an entertainer. What's your advice for them?
Don't give up on your dreams. Just don't give up on your dreams. People will put you down. No matter where you go, you will always find your haters. but you disregard your haters and you keep on winning your dreams. Because I know people have been bullied with their singing. I've had young women and young men tell me, oh, you know, they don't think, they tell me that I can't sing good, that I can't do this and I can't do that. Yeah, you can do it. You were created to worship. And you were created to just make a joyful noise. So if you know that you know that you know that that's the gift that God gave you, continue to pursue your dreams no matter what. And whoever got something to say, keep following your dreams. Because, hey, it's going to happen. And one day you'll sing before angels in heaven. So just keep on following your dream and singing. And those that want to hear you, your audience that wants to hear you, they're going to listen to you and they're going to rejoice. And just know that there's always going to be haters. So just disregard the haters. They probably hate what's going on.
Oh, I know that's right. Panda, an hour is never enough time with you. You're an amazing woman. You're an inspiration. And I thank you for being the very first guest on the very first installment of UCR One-on-One. And girl, I have a little exciting announcement on our own because my co-host took the evening off. Tonight, if you go check out our Facebook page or our website, myuncensoredradio.com, we have the very first installment of UCR Talk available. We're getting the link out, so go check it out on our webpage. You can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/uncensoredradio, and it's My Uncensored Talk with Karen Ashley featuring an interview with Austin St. John from the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. So go take some time, check that out, and make sure you go to PandaRoss.com, find out if she's going to be in the city near you. And Panda, you got some t-shirts and things, right?
Yes, I do. Go on to PandaRoss.com and get your t-shirt, because I'm going to need all of y'all to get on the team. And if you join up and become an official Panda, you'll get a t-shirt, a CD, an autographed picture, both a bracelet and a sticker. Get 5 different things, baby, for $30.
You can't do it. Panda, I'm going to go order myself a kit right now.
You need to go order yourself. Kid, boo. You need to, if you don't order a kid, I'm going to throw you under the bus. I'm going to tell everybody you didn't order
it. I'm so going to do it. So, you got big boy sizes up on that website. I need some big, you know, like Cutty Tenani type shirts.
I got to accommodate all people. I got big fans and little fans, so I got to accommodate them all, baby.
Oh, I love it. Thank you again, Panda, so much. If any of you have missed any part of this interview, you can catch it on demand on our website anytime, anywhere. We're also on iTunes and on your Stitcher app. And again, make sure you go to PandaRoss.com. Thank you so much for being here. Have a great night, everybody. We'll see you next week.
See you next week. Thanks a lot for having me.
Anytime, Chicky.
Are you ready for this one?
We say what we want, give it to you, nonstop, and it's